Man, I'm glad there aren't like real-time Tino odds, because when you started saying Michael, I would have bet the house on Michael Conforto. Thought that's where exactly where you were going. Episode 83 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and a new special guest, first time on the show, for the lead prospect analyst at RotoWire, James Anderson. So Brett, welcome back, and James, good to have you on for the first time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I would say I have big shoes to fill, but...
Yeah, not really true at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brett, I was just going to ask you, I don't know if you saw today, but basically the Browns absorbed a lot of money to acquire a draft pick, and people are comparing it to Moneyball, which is not accurate, because what we really know is that Moneyball is about finding market inefficiencies. So how Moneyball are we being by replacing Craig with James?
We are being very Moneyball, although we're probably also just, pleasing the God that demands sacrifice.
Fair enough. So with James on the show today, we are going to talk about Brett's top 125 Dynasty outfielders list that is a few weeks old at this point, but we had to talk about our top 101 overall list last week. And then after the break, we'll also speak about the BP expert prospect mock draft, whatever adjective you want to put those in, which is just about done. The last installment will go up tomorrow. So by the time this podcast is out, you'll be able to see all of the picks. But we will start at the top with these top 125 outfielders, which was a part of BP's recurring series where we basically took a deep dive into everything you could possibly want on a positional basis for the last, I don't know, it's probably only been 2 months. It feels like 2 years. And obviously the one that we're talking about today starts with Mike Trout at the top. I don't really see any reason to talk about that anymore. But Brett, as soon as we get to 2 and 3, you have Harper ahead of Mookie Betts. Was that at all a difficult decision for you?
Yeah, it was definitely a difficult decision. You know, the difference between the two of them is so slight that I had them in different orders in different versions of this list, and ended up sticking with Harper in the two spot on the final version for a couple of reasons. One is, regardless of what we've seen from Mookie Betts, Bryce Harper clearly has the higher upside. We say that knowing that all the rumors of him playing for Dusty Baker and running more that we were hoping would happen did happen. He stole 21 bases last year. But the power, if it returns as I think it should, the batting average was pretty fluky low last year. He had pretty much the same plate discipline stats from 2015 to 2016, and his batting average dropped about 90 points. So there is a lot of room for him to take that step back forward. And Betts, we saw kind of what I think is the best we will see from him last year, which was really fantastic. I mean, he was a top five player in just about any format. He was, depending on whose valuations you use, he may or may not have been the top overall player in mixed leagues. To say that someone has higher upside than him is a little strange, but it's true. And, you know, I think we're conditioned to think that Harper's just been around forever, but Harper is still younger than Mookie Betts, which is strange. And there's going to be no end to the number of people you can say are younger than Bryce Harper, but Betts is also one of them. Do you have a strong feeling one way or another about Harper versus Betts at this point?
You know, I put Harper ahead of Betts, and I honestly didn't think that long and hard about it, but I also wouldn't fight someone if they wanted to put Betts ahead of Harper. I can't stop sort of dreaming on Harper's tools. I mean, the power is just so special. I didn't think that long and hard about it. I mean, it's a pretty obvious 2-3 after Trout, but I think that you kind of nailed it with Harper's ultimate upside.
And Brett, you know, you said Harper's younger than Betts, but you do have in your write-up here that he's younger by 9 days. So, you know, it's not one of those crazy facts.
It's still fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 3 miles from Fenway Park, so it's not fun for me.
Fair. Yeah.
So you have Starling Marte at 4, which I'm actually really happy to see because maybe he's not underrated anymore, but I think he has been for a long time. But he's really, really good. And then you have this next tier that's Polanco, Yelich, and Stanton down at 7. James, whenever anyone asks me about Stanton, he's you know, one of the players I have the sort of most difficult time evaluating because obviously there's tremendous upside, but the injury risk is very real. So, you know, how do you go about evaluating a guy like Stanton, and does this area look right to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, I used to be the biggest Stanton guy, and I've just owned him too much, and I just keep getting burned by him. But there's a couple guys behind him that I'd even have ahead of him just because I'm so worried about how many games I'm going to get from him year to year. I also think that just we all know about the power, the potential there. I'm not sure what kind of batting average I'm getting with that power anymore. And the amount of guys that can hit 255, 260, 265 and give me 35, 40 homers, I mean, that list seems to grow every year. So it's not as unique of a skill set as it used to be. So I'm perfectly fine with having him last out of those four guys.
So we then have Springer, Blackman, McCutcheon, and Mazzara. And those last two names are really interesting to me because, you know, if I was making this list, I imagine I would have had difficulty ranking them for very different reasons. So Brett, I mean, this is clearly a vote of confidence for McCutcheon. So why do you feel like people should not jump completely off of that bandwagon yet?
I have a philosophy of not abandoning superstars, like legit fantasy superstars, after down seasons. Clearly McCutcheon had a very down season, you know, and you kind of have to take it all with a grain of salt because it's not like it was the kind of performance where you look and say, oh, hey, his underlying numbers weren't that bad. His underlying numbers were not good. So if you want to be concerned about McCutcheon and if you want to be really concerned about McCutcheon, there's plenty of ammunition to do so. That said, I do give the benefit of the doubt to guys like this, because we've seen this happen before. I mean, we've seen, you know, guys like, you know, I'm just thinking of outfielders in the last decade or so. You have Matt Kemp, and I'd have to look up exactly what year it was, but he had one absolutely brutal season in the middle of his string of awesome seasons, and it was 2010. So in 2009, Matt Kemp hit almost 300 with 26 homers, 34 steals, 100 RBI. The next year, he hit below 250 with about the same power, less steals, was caught a lot more often. and people were kind of running away from him. And the next year he went out and had his MVP, or he didn't actually win the MVP, right? He finished second MVP, but he hit .324 with 39 homers and 40 steals. And it's, you know, that's a really extreme example of this, but you know, McCutchen has such a track record of elite performance that it's going to take more than one season for me to think he can't bounce back to close to that level. And I say close to that level because I don't really think the steals are coming back for him in the way that they were. You know, I don't think he's ever going to steal 20 bases again. I wouldn't rule out 10. But I think the days of 20 are over. But I don't see any reason why he can't bounce back with a with another season, you know, hitting around 300 with, you know, 20 something homers, a whole bunch of runs scored, a bunch of times on base, some steals, and be a top 10 outfielder.
So, James, I think there are members of the Mazzara family who are not as high on Mazzara as the members of Tino are. So do you have any sort of do you have any like cold water you can pour on us here? Are we being wildly unrealistic? Because we've loved Mazzara for a long time. But even I think this ranking is not crazy, but a little bit aggressive. How do you feel about it?
No, I mean, I think I am a member of the Mazzara family. Craig and I go back and forth, you know, just kind of recounting amazing Mazzara highlights from the night before occasionally via text message. So, I mean, I think that I'm representing the fan club pretty properly in his absence. I think that this is a absolutely fine spot for him to be. I mean, I think it's kind of crazy to me how he's getting undersold in single season leagues, just because I think people look at what he did last year and they sort of want to just kind of extrapolate that forward as like, well, this is the player he is. And just the amount of guys that come up and hit 20 plus homers, hit for that average at that age in their first full season. I mean, it's a list of future Hall of Famers. Like, I'm not saying Mazzara is going to be that necessarily, but it's so impressive what he did last year, even though it wasn't a monster fantasy season. Just the fact that he was able to hold his own to that level to me is really impressive. That, you know, my only concerns are that he maybe hits it on the ground a little bit too much. I think he's gonna work a pretty good approach long term against lefties. I'm not that concerned about the splits, but I'd like to see him hit the ball in the air a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I'm all aboard.
All right. Well, I can't get you to talk shit about Mazzara, but we have Kyle Schwarber down at 15. How do you feel about Schwarber there?
Oh man, you're asking me to talk shit about the wrong guys.
God damn it! Can't get anyone to disagree. Oh, all right.
I don't know. I think Schwarber is a monster. I actually like him more than Mazzara, to be honest with you. You know, Mazzara, Schwarber, and Buxton are kind of my guys in this tier. Like, I don't know if it's a tier or not, but Schwarber is just another guy who I think people are really just looking at what he's done in the majors thus far, and they either want to say that he needs a platoon, or they're not sure what the batting average is going to look like. I mean, this is a really, really special hitter, so I know he hasn't quite put together that monster season over a full year just yet, but I'm really, really a fan, and I love the fact that he's going to be hitting in the top three or four spots in that lineup for the foreseeable future.
Brett, how much did you pay James to come on and just validate all of your opinions?
More than you can imagine.
If I ask James where Dom Smith should rank on this list and he says in the top 50... I'm gonna know you had some. I'm gonna know you had an influence.
Dom Smith. Thankfully, you're not doing first baseman today. No, I'm not on the Dom Smith bandwagon necessarily. So, I mean, we could make fun of him if you want.
So, Brett, once we get past that, well, at the very end of the tier we're just discussing that has names like, Benintendi, Schwarber, Buxton, the very last guy on that list is David Dahl, who you have at 18, who, of course, is now already in jeopardy of missing time with an injury yet again. At what point do you start digging him a little more seriously for the injury concerns? Is it next year, or do you think, you know, he's someone who's going to grow out of this? Obviously, it's speculating on injuries is a bit of a fool's errand, but he has been injured enough that I am a little leery of him.
Yeah, it's enough to raise an eyebrow, and part of it depends how well he comes back from this and how much he plays this year. I think if he plays in 130, 135 games this year, I'm really not going to be all that concerned. But, you know, if this lingers and then there's another injury and he plays in 95 or 100 games, then it's going to start to be a concern. I mean, you can make the argument that some of his injuries have fallen into the fluky category, but, you know, I also don't necessarily think that's really a thing. I think fluky injuries are less likely to repeat, but, you know, but injuries happen by accident, but injuries happen for a reason. And some players are just more injury prone than others, as you mentioned, regardless of how they actually happen. So I'm still optimistic that Dahl will come back at some point by, you know, say probably the third week of April. And, you know, hopefully the missed time in spring training won't set him back too much. But I mean, it's still a really attractive skill set in that ballpark.
So if we go down to 21, sort of the start of another little mini tier, we have Justin Upton, who's obviously coming off a disappointing first year with the Tigers. Per ESPN's player rater, he was only the 29th best outfielder in mixed leagues. James, will Justin Upton ever be a top 15 outfielder again?
That's a good number. I'll say no, but I mean that it's close. I think he'll be a top 20 outfielder maybe a couple times.
Sure. So do you would you have him here? Would you slide him behind some of these younger guys? I personally like this ranking. I've always been an Upton guy, but I would understand going with some of the younger upside behind him. Sort of where do you weigh in on that?
Yeah, you know, I think I would probably have, man, I'd probably have Herrera and Robles ahead of him, just from this kind of tier of five guys. I think Robles by late 2018 will be at least contributing steals, and by mid 2019 could be just as valuable as Upton, and he's, you know what, 10 years younger, 9 years younger. So I think there's a case for Robles over Upton. And then Herrera, I don't know what to really make of him. I just know that he's young. I know that he's got an extremely unique skill set and he's very productive. And I think the age would just be kind of the difference maker there. But I'm fine with having Upton ahead of Cargo. I'm fine with having him ahead of Eaton and the guys below.
Sure. So I'm going to start moving us on a little more quickly now that we're out of the top 25. We won't go to the false precision round yet, but we won't dwell on so many of these guys per tier. So, James, in this 28 to 35 tier that starts with Ian Desmond and ends with Eloy Jimenez, if you had to pick one player from this tier who you think is sort of going to just fall off the map and might not be a top, you know, 60 guy on this list next year, who are you concerned about?
Well, I think it's between two guys with a very similar skill set. I'll say Chris Davis. I'm always a little bit worried about guys who don't offer a ton of real life value, you know, in terms of defense, on base skills, et cetera, when doing these types of Dynasty League rankings. And, you know, if Davis ends up in a situation where they're are better options that can give his team a better chance in the field, or just in terms of maybe they want a platoon. You know, that's an easy way for him to lose value. And then just his skill set in general, to me, it's not one I'm incredibly excited about in terms of how it's going to age. I think you could say the same about a couple other guys in this tier, but Davis would be my pick to fall off.
And for those of you at home, that's Chris Davis with a K. James, if you're not familiar with this, the favorite pastime of many a BP commenter is just grilling us about Chris Davis with a C and his various positional eligibilities. So we got to make that real clear, or we'll be inundated with emails for the remainder of the month.
Yeah, I'm aware of that ongoing thing. I just wanted to confuse them further.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Please address all concerns to Mike Gianella about Chris Davis. Brett, so once we leave that tier, you have Adam Jones and Jose Bautista. And I want to talk about Jones a little bit because, you know, you were speaking earlier about McCutcheon and how you never want to be the first one out on stars. And I know, you know, Jones' star has not shown as brightly as McCutcheon's in the past few years, but he's still someone who has a very long history of being a top 15, top 20 fantasy outfielder. Why is he so much lower than McCutcheon? I mean, I know they're not super similar players, but why the 26 spot gap here?
I think in general, Jones's profile doesn't age as well as McCutcheon's profile. Yep. You know, Jones is a much more aggressive hitter. I think the ballpark obviously helps him quite a bit. He's still on the Orioles. I think he signed for the next 2 years. But, you know, Jones, I think you're kind of topped out in batting average at this point. I think the power, he hasn't hit 30 home runs since 2013. That's mincing it a little bit because he's hit in the 20s and he's hit towards the high 20s, but he hasn't stolen 10 bases since 2013. It's just a more replaceable profile now. We just looked at Justin Upton, and I think, they're not really comparable yet, but they're, Upton's only about a year and a half younger than Jones, but still has the upside that, makes you want to invest in him more heavily. You know, the Jones is still really good, and I actually do think he's being undervalued quite a bit just for 2017. But I'm not confident that there is a bounce back to anything. I mean, Jones has pretty much been a very, very gradual decline over the last 5 years. And while that still makes him a pretty good outfielder, it shouldn't give us hope that he bounces back to anything.
So I'm going to stick with you, Brett, and ask you the inverse of the question I asked James. In this tier 38 to 45 that starts with Jock Peterson and ends with Nick Williams, if you had to pick one player who you think is going to be, higher next year, maybe a top 20 or flirting with top 20 guy, who's your one to jump from this section?
If I had to pick one, I would say Michael Brantley. I think he's just as likely to fall out of the top 60, as you were talking about with the other tier. But if Brantley does come back and show the same skill level that he was showing before he was hurt, there's definitely room for him to jump up, possibly as high into the top 20. I mean, he's still 29 years old. We shouldn't be giving up on him as a nice outfield two. Obviously we gotta see it because he has been completely unreliable for over a season now. And, it's a question as to when, how much he's actually going to play this year as well. But, there's still a lot of upside there. There's a lot of upside in this tier in general. I mean, you could make a perfectly rational argument for just about anyone outside of Matt Kemp to show up in the, you know, in the top 20. Maybe I wouldn't really make it for Jock Peterson. I think his upside is a little bit more limited than some of these other guys, but his floor obviously is a bit higher. It's a fun tier.
Man, I'm glad there aren't like real time Tino odds, because when you started saying Michael, I would have bet the house on Michael Conforto. Thought that's exactly where you were going.
Same.
Yeah, I still do believe a Conforto can be a good hitter, but you know, the rise in offense and the rise in power that we've seen across the league, his value sort of factors in that I think he's going to end up playing a fair amount this year, and I think he's going to be pretty good. But I don't see his ceiling still being much higher than, you know, a 280 hitter with 25 homers. And I'd be a little bit surprised if he can put together both the average and the power in the same season to that extent.
Sure. So if we go down to 50, we have Corey Ray, and Corey Ray is the highest ranked outfielder from this last draft, or anyone who was signed, this last eligibility group, basically. And we have him a full 11 spots ahead of Mickey Moniak, Kyle Lewis, and Blake Rutherford, who are sort of the next tier, at least in our eyes, of outfielders from that group. So, James, I mean, everyone's heard our opinions about these guys, but do you agree with that? You know, is Ray really head and shoulders above the rest for you? Do you prefer someone else from the group? How do you view the most recent batch of talent?
No, I have Ray as the top guy out of those three. I have them extremely close, though. I probably wouldn't have this big of a gap between them. I think Ray reaches the majors first. I think that he has, you know, a really nice skill set, the potential to contribute in all five categories. I am a little worried about his ability to hit lefties, and I think that the Brewers internal outfield depth, by the time Ray gets there, there might be a ready platoon partner in place. I don't think his defense is going to be good enough to justify him playing center field over a guy like Lewis Brinson. So I think in a corner, you could see him losing some at bats if he can't figure it out against lefties. So that's my only concern with Ray, but I do agree that he should be ahead of Moniak and Lewis.
All right. And then I don't know if there's anyone else I really want to talk about in this tier, because we're getting to like Jay Bruce and stuff. So if we go down a little bit, James, someone who Craig and I, you know, briefly discussed offline the other day as a pretty solid rebound candidate is Alex Gordon, who's down here at 73. And I think Craig and I more met in the sense of a redraft league. But what are Gordon's prospects looking like in dynasty leagues so far? You know, how many more years do we have of being able to reasonably count on him as a top three or four outfielder? Not top three or four, you know what I mean? OF 3-4.
Right. You know, he's older than I think some people realize. Like, he's 33, and back when he was, you know, very productive fantasy outfielder in the early part of this decade, he was stealing double digit bases every season. I have a hard time seeing that coming back. You know, maybe he settles in as, you know, 7 or 8 steals in each of the next couple seasons, but he was never a huge power guy either. So, you know, he really has to get that batting average back up to a pretty solid spot, I think, to be an OF3 in mixed league. So, you know, I think this is a good spot for him. I do think he is a good player to target in 2017 drafts just because of how cheap he's going. But, I mean, there's not a ton of upside there. You're just kind of hoping that he reestablishes himself as just a really solid, like, okay at everything, not great at anything type of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, when I said OF3, I'm thinking more in a TDGX size league, not a 12 teamer. But I think that's all fair. So I am contractually obligated to give this softball to Brett. Brett, at 77 and 78, you have Leody Taveras and Juan Soto. Brett, talk about Leody Taveras and Juan Soto.
They are just about as exciting as rookie league prospects get, at least this offseason. Tavares is more of your prototypical, potential five category center fielder, kind of really not quite Victor Robles tooled up, but really tooled up nonetheless. So it's sort of in the normal amount of really excited that we should be about someone who's that young and that far away from the majors. I do actually think he'll move somewhat quickly for someone his age. He's got a really good approach at the plate given his experience level. And he'll, I believe the plan is for him to start the season in Hickory. And while I think he'll, even if he does, I don't expect him to move up beyond Hickory, but that could set him up on a path to finish 2018 in AA and, could potentially get him into the majors as soon as the second half of 2019, which would be extraordinarily aggressive. I think 2020 is more realistic, but it's a really good all around fantasy skill set. Soto is sort of your more prototypical corner outfielder with a nice average and power profile. He was really good in short season ball this year. He's also probably going to start in low A. There's less speed with Soto than there is with Tavares, but there's more power with Soto. So it really just kind of depends what profile you like better. I like Tavares's profile slightly better, but you really can't go wrong betting on either of them at this point, as they have some of the higher ceilings in the minors from a fantasy standpoint.
All right, I'm having trouble. I think it's time for the false precision round. I think we've gone that deep. Are you guys game?
Game.
Yeah. All right. So James, David Peralta is at 83. Missed most of last season with injuries, but as recently as 2015 was very good. In 2015, David Peralta hit 312, 371, 522, with 17 homers and 9 steals. James, what will David Peralta's triple slash line be in 2017?
I will say 282, 330, 430.
All right. So in a TDGX league, we're thinking a nice OF4-5, that type of production?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Brett, down at 89, you have Adam Duvall. Adam Duvall hit 241, 297, 498 with 33 homers and 103 RBI last season. Brett, how many homers and RBI will Duvall have next year?
27 homers, 88 RBI.
I like that. You said that with conviction. You've convinced me. Those mm-hmm. will indeed be Adam Duvall's stats. Oof, we're getting down to the dregs. Okay, James, at 96, we have Leonis Martin, who is waiting for this page to load. All right, who last year hit 247, 306, 378 with 15 homers and 24 steals. James, what will Martin's batting average be, and how many steals will he get?
I'll say 242, and he steals 21 bases.
All right, so pretty much a repeat, just a mildly worse repeat.
Yeah,
that mildly worse repeat sounds like Leonis Martin to me. And Brett, last one. Down at 109, you have Matt Holliday, true Yankee Matt Holliday, who last year hit 246, 322, 461 with 20 homers. What will Matt Holliday's triple slash be next season?
I think it will be 273, 341, for 17.
You're very quick on these. I'm impressed.
I try.
All right. Well, then, to be fair, I guess we will end with James. James, in 2001, Enya released her hit single, Only Time. In what year will Enya release her next hit single?
2013.
Welcome back to episode 83 of Tino. I hope you used that break to play your own false precision round in your mind with some of the guys at the very end of that last list, like, oh, I don't know, let's say Nori Aoki. Why don't you do some false precision with Nori Aoki at home? So now
we are 12 steals. Exactly 12 steals.
Too confident, Brett. Too eager. Too much. So now we are going to talk about the BP Expert mock draft for 2017. And this is the fifth overall installment and fourth installment at Baseball Prospectus of this draft, in which we get 15 so-called experts, mostly people just like Craig, Brett, and I, so not really experts, but somewhat experts, to go through a 10-round draft, which if you're good at math at home, means we go through 150 players and just sort of line them up and see where the chips fall. So the only rule is that they must have prospect eligibility. And, you know, we're not really trying to build a team from this because there are only 10 spots. So you don't really have to worry about positional eligibility or anything like that. It is simply draft who you think the best remaining player is, or, you know, at least don't draft your sleeper who you think you can get later. So James and I actually had the pleasure of picking first and second in this year's draft. And James, you led things off with Yoan Moncada. Was this a remotely difficult decision for you?
I think it's closer for me than it is for pretty much everyone else I've talked to. I think people undersell Benintendi's upside. But Moncada is just, he's the freak. I mean, of everyone that's still prospect eligible, he's the one with the legitimate superstar potential who's close to the majors. So, I mean, it is closer for me than I think it is for most people, but it still wasn't that hard.
Sure. Well, since you were good enough to pass up on Benintendi, I was able to snatch him up with the number two pick. So I appreciate that, although I would have taken Moncada where you are too. Brett, you took Eloy Jimenez down at 12. Obviously, a very, very easily justifiable pick, but you know, ahead of some guys who have big upsides but are much closer to the majors, like ahead of Lewis Brinson, ahead of Giolito, ahead of J.P. Crawford. What made you pull the trigger on Eloy there?
He's just got, you know, he only has the A-ball experience, but he's got that combination of batting average and power potential that is just not there with that many prospects in the minors. So yeah, I mean, it's in theory, you'd like to take someone who's a little bit closer to the majors, but he is he has all the upside that you would want, and I think he's really not that far off. It's almost a shame he's on the Cubs because, you know, they have so much major league position player talent. I really think you could push Jimenez to the majors by next year, and I don't think there'd be any reason for the Cubs to do that. But he's just extremely, extremely talented, and could be a, you know, 290, 30 homer guy.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think it's just a little jarring to see him ahead of names that are a lot closer. But as you alluded to, maybe not as far away as people think. So as we move deeper into the draft, I'll ask things like, you know, what was your favorite pick from this round? But in the first two or three rounds, I mean, they're all good picks. So we'll just sort of go a little faster. Brett, on the turn, you took Raimel Tapia when it was your choice next. I took Franklin Barreto at 29. And then, James, you took Vlad Guerrero Jr. at 30 overall, which I think it's fair to say is pretty aggressive on him. I think Brett and I had him in the 60s when we did our top 101 dynasty prospects list. So what do you see in Guerrero that led you to make him your second pick?
I just think he's got a incredibly unique combination of power and hit. Similar to Eloy, I think he's got a tiny bit more upside in both power and hit than Jimenez does. I mean, the scouts I've talked to are just can't say enough about this guy's bat. And, you know, I understand the desire to pump the brakes, given the fact that he probably won't stay at third base. You know, he hasn't played above rookie ball. I just see an incredibly advanced hitter. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine him failing at all until he gets to double A. Like, I think he's just going to rake this year at low A. I think he might even force his way to high A, like at the very end of the season. I don't think he's as far off as your typical rookie league hitter. And, you know, first base, I know it's deep, but it's not as deep as I think some people make it out to be. And, you know, if he does what I think he can do in terms of batting average and home runs, he can be a top 20 pick in his prime seasons, regardless of what position he's playing. So I just think the bat's really special.
Yeah, you know, that point you made about first base not being that deep is one we really harped on when we talked about our first base list on this podcast. And just to give people an idea of how truthful we're being there, I mean, Mike Napoli was the 14th best first baseman last year. He hit 239 with 34 homers. Albert Pujols was the 10th best. He only hit 260 with 25 homers. No, I'm sorry, that's just projected. He hit 268 with 31 homers. So obviously very, very good numbers, but there's a pretty clear path to someone like Vlad being a top 10 option at the position.
Yeah, and it's, you know, at this point in the draft, like I know some of the guys that go after him are closer. But, you know, when you take a guy like Vlad, you're also taking a player who you can trade. Like if you know, this is a fake league, obviously. I mean, we're not playing it out, but if my team was contending this upcoming season, I think Vlad's going to be producing at low A to the point where if I wanted to, I can just flip him and get a guy that can really, really help me right now. And, you know, I think some of the guys that go after him have some warts where, you know, by May or June, maybe their value isn't quite where it is right now. And I just think that, you know, whether I want to contend now or in the future, I think Guerrero kind of fits both of those needs.
So at 31, you took Kyle Tucker, who I love, one of my favorite prospects. I followed that by taking Nick Williams, which will absolutely shock our regular listeners that I have quadruple down on Nick Williams. Brett, you took Zach Collins later in this round. I'm not going to ask you about Zach Collins because you've talked about Zach Collins ad nauseum. I am going to ask you what your favorite pick from either rounds 3 or 4 was.
My favorite pick of either round, as much as I hate to give him credit, I thought the Robert Gesellman pick in round 4 for Craig was really good. He was right. I would have taken him ahead of Jason Grom, who I took in the 4th round. But, you know, I think that his progression and tick up and stuff is very real, and I think he has a chance to be a really good fantasy starter this year and hold it for a little while. I think we could be talking about just a really solid third starter in fantasy leagues, and he'll start the season in the rotation, so that always helps.
Yeah, and you just mentioned that you took Grom with your 4th round pick. That's interesting to me, not because I disagree with it. I think Grom is awesome, but just because pitchers always fall in this. Every year, we see people gamble on super, super high upside position players who are super far away instead of taking arms. So what sort of the boring answer you could give me is I think he was the best player left. But what gives you sort of the confidence to go with Grom here, whereas you know, there aren't that many pitchers off the board in front of him?
Yeah, I think he was the last pitcher on the board who has just true SP1 upside. You can see it in, you can see sort of a good SP2 upside in some of the other kind of high variance guys later on, but yeah, if you're talking about guys that have the potential, the true potential to be SP1s, you're talking about Alex Reyes, you're talking about Lucas Giolito, and you're talking about Jason Grom, and that's it.
So I followed that up with Jorge Mateo near the end of round four, and then James actually, which Brett talked about earlier, but James popped Soto and Taveras with his next two picks back-to-back, breaking the heart of Brett and Craig and somewhat myself from a distance. So James, since Brett already spoke about both of those players and I did not give you an opportunity to chime in, is there anything you want to add about them?
No, I think he nailed the kind of the scouting reports on both guys.
Okay, well, in that case, I will give you the opportunity to grill me instead. You can ask me whatever two questions you want to, since I did not let you in on the Soto and Taveras fun.
Will, let me ask you about Jorge Mateo.
Yes.
Will he debut in the majors in a New York Yankees uniform?
I believe that he will, yes.
All right.
I think that I think they'll go with Torres at short or at third, and I think Mateo is probably their long-term second baseman.
All right, yeah, I could see that. I think that he's interesting. I think it's kind of clear that maybe they soured on him a tiny bit last year, and if, you know, I think their window to contend is going to open up here pretty quickly, and if they need to dip into the farm to add something, I could see it being him. But yeah, I mean, I think if he can get everyday bats at second base, then I think that's an awesome pick.
Yeah, I mean, I said yes with like a 55-45. not a lot of confidence there. Nowhere near as confident as Brett's false precision round answers.
Do I get one more?
You get one more.
What pick from round five did you possibly shake your head at?
Oh, you're gonna make me throw someone under the bus. I love it. The easy answer is Dom Smith, but I have spoken against Dom Smith enough that I don't really feel the need to continue that. I will go down to Sam Travis, who was the last pick of round five, who I think might be a little bit undersold in terms of real value, because I do think he can be either a second division starter or like a fine, not everyday guy on a first division team. And I think he gets short shifted as being referred to as absolute trash quite a bit. But this early in a fantasy draft, I really don't see it. Maybe if you play in a doubles league, I start to get it a little bit more, but he's not going to have the power that you want from a fantasy first baseman. So, Lauren Michaels took him, and if he really likes him, that's fine, but he's someone I think probably would have been around in maybe round seven or eight.
Do you think that Sam Travis will be treated slightly better now that Travis Shaw is not in the Red Sox system?
I was looking forward to Sam Travis Shaw, not because it would have been good, but just for the headline writing capabilities. but I don't know if they have a ton to do with each other, honestly, other than that they would have been a sort of ready-made bad platoon. I do think that Mitch Moreland isn't that good. And I think the Red Sox lineup is like thin enough that if there's an injury in the second half of the season, Sam Travis might get a shot. And if that's the case and you're in a TDGX size league, then yeah, sure. I mean, if he's getting at bats and he's playing in Fenway, he might be worth your time. But, you know, his ceiling is as maybe a close your eyes and squint top 25 first baseman someday. And that's just not a ceiling you want with a top 100 pick.
Agreed.
All right, so I will take back the host mantle from James after that brutal line of questioning, and we'll pop back to Brett, who took Rowdy Tellez. I took Yunus Diaz in that round. Then we get to round six, and Brett, you ended up taking Lourdes Gurriel in round six, who is probably one of the guys we've gotten the most questions about in the last few months in Bat Signal. So what did you think about popping him here? Is this where you're not really sure about it, where you're thrilled he was still there? What's your Gurriel breakdown?
I mean, at that point, I thought he was a really good pick. I know there is a contingent of folks out there that are just propagating that he will be a utility player at best, and that may end up being the truth. But Gurriel was really good in Cuba, was pretty well scouted in Cuba, and was extremely highly ranked among Cuban prospects while he was there. He's still 23 years old, and just because he's not the type of player who really acquits himself super well in a showcase doesn't mean he's not the type of player who could be a very good major leaguer. I don't think you're looking at any sort of fantasy superstar here, but in any sort of league greater than 10 or 12 teams, I think Gurriel is going to be a reliable starter who contributes in every category, regardless of what position he ends up at.
So James, in round 6, 7, and 8, you went arms. You took Forrest Whitley, Tristan McKenzie, and Franklin Perez. How did you feel inside when you realized you were going to take three pitchers in a row?
I felt great when I took Whitley and McKenzie back to back because I love those guys, and I kind of had a feeling they'd both be there. Did not want to take a third arm in a row, but I just kept getting sniped on the way down, and he was the best guy on my board by quite a bit, so I was fine with it. I mean, I in an exercise like this, I'm looking for guys. If I'm taking a pitcher, I'm looking for guys that I think have a realistic chance to be better than just a mid-rotation starter, and I think all three of these guys have the stuff and the size and all the traits you look for in a guy that's a number two. So, I was fine with it in the end, just based on who was available, but I certainly wasn't trying to go 1, 2, 3 with pitchers there.
So you're not going to admit that you just wanted to copy me by taking a left arm Franklin?
Yeah, that, I mean, if Kilmeade had been there, it would have been an interesting toss up between those two guys. You definitely beat me to the Franklins there.
All right, that feels good. I know that it takes a big man to admit that, and I appreciate you being gracious. So Brett, your last. I'm not going to talk about Matt Theis. You can't make me. Would you have still take? You took Alex. Kirilloff. I don't even know.
Kirilloff. Yeah.
Okay, you took Alex Kirilloff in the 8th round, and this was pre-Tommy John, yes?
Yes.
Would you still have taken him here had you known that his elbow had a boo-boo?
No, probably not. I'm trying to remember which way we were going, right? 8, we were going from bottom to top. So just looking over some of the names after him that I might have taken instead, I might have taken Kilmeade. At that point, over him, I might have taken Jorge Ona around earlier. He was towards the top of my queue, and I ended up taking him in the 9th round. Same with Brett Phillips, who would have been one of the top guys on my board as well. So, it doesn't really concern me a ton long term. I don't think Kirilloff's value drops that much in a dynasty league, but it probably knocks him about 20 to 30 spots further down on a prospect list just because of the lost year of development. And you know, it's tough to lose that first year, the first year you're going to play a full season of professional baseball. You know, I think he's talented enough to come back from it, but it's not exactly starting off on the right foot.
James, excluding your final two picks, who are Hoskins and Luis Urias, give me a guy from round 9 or 10 who you think could go in the top 4 rounds next year.
All right. You know, Jorge Ona is a good one, but Brett already talked about him. I like Taylor Trammell a lot. I think you know, DJ Short got him in the 9th round. I think we'll learn quite a bit about him early on this season. You know, I think last year he really raked in the Pioneer League. He's a potential 5 category guy. He kind of has some similarities with a guy like Leody Taveras. Doesn't have quite the pedigree or the track record, but you know, he signed for a pretty big bonus. I know he didn't go super high in the draft, but I mean, I think it was a top 20 bonus in the draft. So, I mean, he's a pretty special talent. I could see Trammell really impressing some people this season, and just everyone looking at the total package of skills and moving him up quite a bit heading into next year.
Fair enough. Brett, I think that's it for me. Did you have any other burning mock draft questions?
Who do you think? I'll ask kind of the opposite question. Which player in the last 3 rounds do you think exhausts his prospect eligibility by the end of 2017 and kind of establishes himself as solid, you know, not a star, but a solid fantasy player?
That is a lot of caveats. Hold on, let me just make sure this guy is as close to the majors as I think he is. I think there is a chance that David Paulino could be doing pretty well if he starts. Always going to be a chance that he is a reliever, but the Astros rotation is not terribly deep. And even though Paulino doesn't have, you know, SP2-3 upside, if you told me he was well on his way to cementing a nice career as an SP5-6 by the end of the season, that would not surprise me in the least.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
How many more rounds would we have had to go before you popped Enya, Brett? Episode 83 of Tino. As always, we're going to send you out with a little housekeeping. So before we get to our long list of all the different places that you can find us, James, why don't you tell us a little bit about where we can find you and what you are doing on the interwebs these days?
Yeah, so you can find all my stuff at rotowire.com. You can get a free 10-day trial there. Don't need a credit card for that. Just posted my top 250 Dynasty League ranks. They're not by position, they're just overall. And then you can listen to the podcast that Clay Link and I do, the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. You can find that on iTunes or anywhere else. And the SiriusXM show that Clay and I host every Saturday from 1 to 3 Eastern on the SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Channel. And you know, we've had Brett on, we've had Craig on, hopefully we'll have Ben on in the not so distant future. So yeah, check us out there.
Yeah, James stuff is great. It's always always great when you can join us for the mock draft. We were happy to have you on, Tino. And one of the things I really love about your content is that, with that one exception, it's Craig-free. So I think that's a really strong, individualistic segment you got there for yourself is Craig-free Dynasty League content.
It's 99.8% Craig-free, and we're trying to even cut it back a little bit further than that.
Yeah, well, I have faith in you.
We all have dreams.
Yeah. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at TinoPodcast@gmail.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you are using to listen to this podcast. We've been very good, and this is like our fifth episode on time, so I think we deserve some new reviews. You can find James on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. You can find Brett at Brett Sayer BP, not Brett Sayer, not the Dynasty Guru anymore, so we changed that up. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night. It is Craig's mom's birthday.
Nice.
What a good son.
Indeed.